Last week in the series on money and wealth, we left off looking at acquiring money and how we do that. And I was talking about employment. That's the means by which we're going to acquire most or all of our wealth, and whether that be being an employee or an employer. And I want to continue talking about that. One thing I did want to mention before that, that I forgot to last time, is that as I go through this, we don't have many children in the church, but I do want to take the opportunity to talk to the young ones, because it's very important. If you get this right, if you get the money thing right when you're a kid, up through your teens, 20s, 30s, you'll be light years ahead of all of your peers. So, Braden, if you want to make money, if you want to have money, if you want to buy things, you must work for it. That's what you have to do. That's the only way to legitimately get money, is to work for it. So when you want something, you need to work and save for it. If you want a new gun, you want a four-wheeler, you want toys, you want whatever, you need to work and save the money for it. Someday you're going to want a car. It won't be that many years. It seems like a long ways down the road now, but it'll go by very quickly. And when you, if you want a car, you start saving now. Start saving that money now. And then someday when you're 16, if your parents allow you to buy one, you can go and actually buy your own car. And when you do that, I recommend, at least for your first car, pay for it in cash. And I mean paper money. And you walk up, when you finally make the deal and you take your dad with you and he says this is an okay car for you to buy, you count those $100 bills out on the hood of that car, one after another, until you get to how many ever thousand you paid for it. And that'll give you a feeling, like an unimaginable feeling of accomplishment to do that. You'll feel like you made your own way. And then buy every other car for the rest of your life just like that, except you don't have to count the $100 bills out. You can just write a check. And that just transfers the $100 bills from your bank account to somebody else's bank account. But you're still paying for it. So that's what I recommend. And even at your young age, you can do work maybe for your parents. Extra work, right? Not your normal chores, but extra work. Maybe you can talk them into paying you for it. You know, you can offer to do work around the house. Or maybe your grandparents or your aunts, maybe they would pay you to do some work for them. Or maybe some neighbors, if your parents allow that when you get big enough. And then you can get a job, of course, when you get to that age. But just remember, don't ever expect anyone to give you anything. Nobody owes you anything. Your parents owe you shelter and clothing and food right now. But other than that, nobody owes you anything. You just remember that. Everything that you get, you need to work and earn. It's up to you. Don't ever forget that. All right, now let's get back to what I wanted to say. And I'll have more to say to you, Braden, as we go through this sermon. I want to kind of bring it down to you as we talk about various things here. So employees in the Bible are called hirelings. Now that may have a negative connotation to you. When you hear that word, you may think, that doesn't sound good. And there's reason, good reason for that thought in your head, if you did have that thought, because there is a negative connotation in certain contexts to being a hireling. But being a hireling in general, there's nothing wrong with that. Let me first of all define the term, and then I'll give you a verse. A hireling is one who serves for hire or wages, a hired servant, a mercenary, soldier. So, like I said, a hireling in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with. But there is a negative connotation. And that comes from John chapter 10, when Jesus talked about the hireling who's not the shepherd. And I do want to take you to this passage because it proves a point that I made last Sunday that I didn't give you a verse for, and I didn't think of the verse at the time. I just thought about it this morning. Remember last Sunday I said that nobody will care for your business the way you care for it? If you're a self-employed person, if you're a business owner, that nobody will care about your business like you do. You just can't buy a business, just give it to some Joe Blow to run for you, and everything will just go fine. Most of the time it won't, because employees just don't care about the business like the employer does. And I got a verse that proves it. John 10, 11 through 15. I would say this is almost always the case. I mean, there is the rare time when an employee just considers that business like his own and treats it just like his own, but most employers or most employees don't. John 10, 11 through 13. I am the good shepherd, Jesus said. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is an hireling and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming and leaveth the sheep and fleeth, and the wolf catcheth them and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth because he is an hireling and careth not for the sheep. He's just being paid to tend the sheep. He doesn't really care about the sheep. The sheep belong to the shepherd, the business owner, if you will, right? The shepherd cares about the sheep because those sheep belong to him, right? They're his sheep. But the hireling that he hires to take care of them, this guy is just in, he's just in it for the money. He doesn't care really about the sheep. The moment that any danger comes, the moment that that lion or that bear comes or some robber comes to try to steal the sheep, he's gone because he's an hireling. He doesn't care about the sheep. Now, there's obviously a spiritual lesson being taught here, but you can also derive from this a natural lesson. If you leave your business to an employee to take care of it all, he's not going to take care of it very well. Chances are. When any adversity happens, when any difficulty happens, when the going gets tough, he's going to get going and just go somewhere else and get another job. Right? He's not going to take care of it like you would. But if you are that rare employee that views that company like your own and treats it like your own and works hard to make it prosperous as if it were your own, your employer is going to highly value you and you will go places. You will be the last person to ever be let go from that company. You will be promoted. You will be advanced. If you have that ownership mindset and you treat that company like it's your own, you will go places. Because most people won't, so you will stand out big time. Now, a hireling is rewarded for his work with wages, the Bible teaches us in Job 7 and verse 2. Job 7 and verse 2. Like I said, there's nothing wrong with being a hireling, to being an employee, but there is something wrong with being a spiritual hireling. If a minister is a hireling, if he's in it for the money, if he's just, this is just a job. And for most, I mean, honestly, most pastors out there, with the exception of the ones like in our circle of churches and a few other churches that aren't corporations, most churches, probably 99% of them, I'm guessing, their pastors are literally, by definition, hirelings. They really are. I'm not saying they're spiritual hirelings, but they are hirelings. They are employees of the corporation. They get a paycheck every 2 weeks or every month or whatever. They get a W-2 at the end of the year. They get their taxes taken out. They are an employee. They are literally an hireling. That's not how our church works. I am a self-employed person as far as that goes. It's a totally different system, different mindset, different everything. I don't have a salary. There's no negotiated salary. There's no guarantee for anything for me. A lot of people wouldn't like that setup, but that's a biblical setup. There's no employee-employer relationship in the Bible when it comes to ministers and things like that. Anyway, Job 7 and verse 2. Job 7 and verse 2. It says, as a servant earnestly desireth the shadow. He's talking about when it gets to be evening. Right, he's earnestly desiring to be done with work, in other words. As a servant earnestly desireth the shadow, and an hireling looketh for the reward of his work. And that's what happened in those days in the evening. When you got to the end of the day, you got the reward for your work. You got paid at the end of the day. And I believe this is another example of a parallelism. A servant desiring the shadow and hireling looking for the reward of his work. A servant and hireling are the same thing, or there can be the same thing, and I'll give you the definitions here in a second. So employees are a type of servant. A servant primarily is a person of either sex who is in the service of a master or mistress, one who is under obligation to work for the benefit of a superior or to obey his or her commands. A personal or domestic attendant, one whose duty is to wait upon his master or mistress or do certain work in his or her household. This is the dictionary says, the usual sense when no other is indicated by the context, sometimes with the defining word as domestic servant. Now, number two is a broader, wider sense. In a wider sense, one who is under the obligation to render certain services to or to obey the orders of a person or a body of persons, especially in return for wages or salary. So in that sense, employees are servants, right? They obey a master who's the business owner, the boss, or whatever, and they do so for wages or salary. Nothing wrong with being a servant, right? The Bible says if you're called being a servant, care not for it, in 1 Corinthians 7, I think it is. Nothing wrong with that. It also says, but if thou mayest be free, use it rather, right? So if you have an entrepreneurial knack or desire and you can be free and you can start your own business, and you want to work 18 hours a day for $5 an hour, then, you know, have at it. And you can, you know, figure out what that's really all about in many cases. Not always. Sometimes it turns out pretty well. But a servant is one, as the definition said, one who is under obligation to render certain services. Obligation is the action of binding oneself by oath, promise, or contract to do or forbear something, an agreement whereby one person is bound to another, or two or more persons are mutually bound, also that to which one binds himself, a formal promise, which is exactly what you do when you take a job. And a lot of jobs require you to sign a contract, or it's at least a verbal contract, where you agree to do certain things, to not do certain things, to be bound by this agreement. You're a servant, and there's nothing wrong with that. We can see that actually from Job in Job 7. If you back up to the previous verse there in verse 1, we can see here that hirelings are a type of servant. I think this is pretty clear from this verse anyway. Is there not an appointed time to man upon earth? Are not his days also like the days of an hireling? As a servant earnestly desireth the shadow, and as an hireling looketh for the reward of his work. So you can kind of see here that a hireling is a servant, right? A servant is a hireling. I mean, some servants in the Bible are slaves, and they're not paid for their labor, but other servants in the Bible are called hired servants, and we'll look at that here right now, as a matter of fact. They're called hired servants. They are employees, in other words. Let me give you some examples in the Bible of hired servants or employees. Leviticus 25 and verse 6. Leviticus 25 and verse 6. It says, and the Sabbath of the land shall be meat for you, for thee, and for thy servant, and for thy maid, and for thy hired servant, and for thy stranger that sojourneth with thee. So in this verse, you have both types of servants. The servant, first of all, would refer to the bond servant, the man who's owned and not paid, and or he's not paid monetarily anyway. He's obviously given food and shelter and clothing and things like that. And then you have the hired servant, which would be like an employee who's under some kind of a contract to work for a certain wage. And then go down to verse 53. Verse 53 of Leviticus 25 says, and as a yearly hired servant shall he be with him, and the other shall not rule with rigor over him in thy sight. A yearly hired servant. So he's under contract to work for a year, right? So as much as things change, they still stay the same, because, you know, we still have that same thing today. There are people still take contract labor. They'll take a year-long contract where they work for an employer for a certain period of time. You know, they had something similar back in Bible times. This is also a New Testament thing in Mark 1 and verse 20. Mark 1 and verse 20. And if you don't like the idea of being a servant, you better get used to it, because it talks about his servant shall serve him in heaven, right? Where we are, we will be and are the servants of the Lord. So there's nothing wrong with being a servant. Mark 1 and verse 20 says, "And straightway he called them," this is Jesus calling James and John, "and they left their father Zebedee in the ship with the hired servants and went after him." So they had some employees. So these were James and John's father, and maybe themselves, maybe they were business partners, but at least the father was a business owner. He was a ship owner, a fisherman, and he hired people to work for him. And then Luke 15:17. Just to show you, the modern employer-employee relationship is not modern. It's been around for as old as the hills. Luke 15 and verse 17. "And when he came to himself, he said," this is the prodigal son, "how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger." He's going to go back and become an employee of his father. Instead of being the heir of the estate, he would have owned it all and been in charge of it all. Now he's going to go back and be an employee. But that's better than eating pig slop, isn't it? A hired servant is a hired person, is one who is engaged or employed for payment, let out on hire, a mercenary. Now, a mercenary is one who labors merely for hire, a hireling, a mercenary person. Now, when we think of mercenary today, we think about soldiers that are not working for the, not actual soldiers, but they are killers, basically. They're paid killers. But that's a very narrow definition of mercenary. That is a mercenary. They are laboring for payment. They are employed for payment. It just happens the payment happened, or the work happens to be killing people. But by definition, broadly, every one of you who is an employee is a mercenary. Did you know that? You're a mercenary. Mercenary, the adjective describing a person, is working merely for the sake of monetary or other reward, actuated by considerations of self-interest. And that's honestly why everybody's an employee. It comes down to self-interest, obviously. And that's why an employer is an employer. It comes down to self-interest. And it's in his self-interest to hire employees. It's in their self-interest to work for him. But that's why the free market works so beautifully, because everybody pursues their own self-interest, and by pursuing your own self-interest, you better everybody else, right? The employer gives people jobs because he pursues his self-interest. The employee helps the employer to make the stuff and the goods and services that he needs. It's all based on self-interest, but it ends up serving one another through self-interest. It's pretty interesting, actually, if you think about it. Now, the employer is the master, and the employee is the servant. Employer is one who employs. It is one who employs servants, workmen, etc., for wages. So remember, a hireling is an employee, which is a servant, and an employer is an employer of servants, of workmen. And he functions as a master. A master is one having direction or control over the action of another or others, a director, leader, chief, commander, a ruler, or governor. So the master doesn't specifically talk about being an employer, but employer obviously is a master. He has the direction and the control and the authority, and he's the leader, and he tells you what to do, right? So the employer is the master, the employee is the servant. An employee is a person employed for wages, something that is employed. So though an employer is the master in the relationship, he is still under obligation by God and by the law to pay wages that that he has agreed to pay to his laborers, to his employees. So you don't want to think about like the master-servant relationship here like in a slavery relationship where the master has absolute control and the slave has no say in it. That's not how it works. A master-servant relationship, when you're talking about employer-employee, is not unlimited power. He still has to, he has certain things that he has to abide by contract, both in God's eyes and in the eyes of the law. If he agrees to pay an employee a certain amount, he is bound to do that. He can't just not do it because he's the master. His authority ends where the contract ends. Wherever the contract, whatever the contract stipulates, that's the ultimate authority, not his personal whims. Just let me give you some examples here, how the Bible teaches that masters are under obligation to pay what they have agreed to pay. Deuteronomy 24, 14 through 15. So as an employee, you do have rights. And you have legal rights if your employer does not abide by the agreement, provided the agreement was in writing. If it's not in writing, you may as well forget about it. But Deuteronomy 24, 14 through 15. Thou shalt not oppress an hired servant, an employee, in other words, that is poor and needy, whether he be of thy brethren or of thy strangers that are in thy land within thy gates. At his day thou shalt give him his hire, that's his wages. Neither shall the sun go down upon it, for he is poor, and setteth his heart upon it, lest he cry against thee unto the Lord, and it be sin unto thee. So it would be a sin for an employer to hire a person, to tell him he would pay him a certain amount, an hourly wage, or an amount for the job, or whatever it was, and then to not pay him, that's a sin. And that employee has a right to complain, and I'll talk about that in a second. He has a right to complain to the employer, and he has a right to complain to God about it, and God will take his side. This is what the Lord says. Now let's look at Leviticus 19:13. Leviticus 19:13. The employer holds most of the cards, but he doesn't hold them all. Leviticus 19:13, thou shalt not defraud thy neighbor, neither rob him. The wages of him that is hired shall not abide with thee all night until the morning. In this case, payday was every day. That's how it used to work. And you paid at the end of every day. There's no, oh, I forgot my checkbook, I forgot my bag of money. No, you pay. You owe it, you pay it. Now, there are some cases, I mean, some people, especially if you're working for a startup company, there are times when they just can't pay. They just don't have any money. You know, things have happened, and then you have a choice where you can just quit. Or if you really believe in the company and you think the man's a good man and you think this company will be successful and they just need a little bit of time, if you've been wise with your money, you can say, that's okay. I can work for a month or so without being paid. You can get me back, right? If you trust him, you don't have to. You could quit right then. You could even try to sue him. Good luck getting blood out of a turnip because he doesn't have any money, right? But that's happened. You know, there have been lots of people that have foregone paychecks because their employer was in a bind and they trusted. And I don't think that's a bad thing if it's not going to jeopardize your own family or something. And if you've done right with your money, wouldn't be that big of a deal. Because it's tough. It's tough for an employer to make payroll sometime. Any employer would tell you that if you ever talked to one. But anyway, Jeremiah 22 and verse 13. Jeremiah 22 and verse 13. But employers don't have that luxury these days, because I'll read you some statistics later on in this study, but most people out there could not go without a paycheck for like a week, 2 weeks. They'd be totally screwed. Some of them couldn't go without a paycheck for a day. You take some people and delay their paycheck a day, and checks are bouncing like crazy because they are literally living like paycheck to paycheck. They need that paycheck because there's something, stuff's coming out of that account like the very day the paycheck comes. So that's not going to work for a lot of startup companies hiring people like that if they get into a bind. And that's no way to live, by the way. Anybody that's living like that needs to make some serious changes, because that's terrible. For one thing, you're probably going to die of a heart attack from all the stress in your life living like that. That's crazy. But anyway, I'll talk more about that later. Jeremiah 22 and verse 13. Woe unto him that buildeth his house by unrighteousness, and his chambers by wrong, that useth his neighbor's service without wages, and giveth him not for his work. God pronounces a woe on somebody who uses his neighbor's service and doesn't pay him. Now, you know, who's your neighbor? Well, Jesus taught us in the Good Samaritan, your neighbor can be anybody in your life, basically. And it could be your own family. How many people use their family's services without wages and wouldn't even offer to pay them and just expect family to just, you know, do whatever they need without any consideration? Now, of course, I don't think family members need paid for every little thing, and I think we ought to help each other out, obviously. But there are some people out there that just expect, oh, he's family and he's got this, whatever this profession is, and he ought to just do everything for me for free just because he's family. Well, woe unto him that uses his neighbor's services without wages and giveth him not for his work. At least offer, be willing to pay. And Malachi 3 and verse 5. Malachi 3 and verse 5. The Lord says, and I will come near to you to judgment, and I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers and against the adulterers, against the false swearers. We're talking about some bad people here. Sorcerers, people that are in the occult, right? Adulterers, I mean, it doesn't get much worse than that. False swearers, people that are dishonest and liars. There's some bad people here we're talking about. And against those who oppress the hireling of his wages. Whoa. Whoa. You don't pay your employee his wages. You agreed to pay him a certain amount and then you don't pay him. Well, you're lumped in there with sorcerers and adulterers and false swearers. Think about that. It's a pretty serious offense, isn't it? The widow and the fatherless and that turn aside the stranger from his right, like his right of payment. And fear not me, saith the Lord of hosts. So the Lord does not take kindly to employers that don't pay their employees what they promised. Now, if you're an employee and you don't think you're being paid fairly or treated fairly, then you can ask for a raise or for better working conditions. You're within your rights to ask for a raise if you don't think you're being paid enough. And if you're an employer, or if your employer will not grant your request, then you have two choices. You can either quit or you can keep your mouth shut. Those are your two choices. If you don't think you're being paid enough, or you don't like the conditions that you're working under, you can ask for a change. The employer has the right to grant it or to not grant it, and if he doesn't grant it, two choices. Quit or keep your mouth shut. That's it. Those are your choices. The Bible teaches us to be content with our wages. This was specifically spoken of soldiers, but it's true of all of us. We're all supposed to be, to have contentment. Luke 3:14. We live in a free market society. It's not as if we're in a caste society where this is your lot and you have no choice, or you're a slave or something. You live in a free market, right? If you don't like your salary, then go get a different one. But be content with what you have. Luke 3:14, and the soldiers likewise demanded of him, this is demanding of John the Baptist when they wanted to be baptized, saying, what shall we do? And he said unto them, do violence to no man, neither accuse any falsely, and be content with your wages. Be content. Now, if you agree to work for a certain wage, as long as your employer pays you that wage, you have no right to complain about it. Think about it. You sat down, you agreed, I will work for this much per hour, or this much per month, or this much per year, or this much per contract, this much per job, whatever. You agreed, so you have no right to complain about the wage that you agreed to, right? Turn with me to Matthew 20. I give you a verse. Matthew 20, 10 through 15. Now we all, I think probably most of us would fall into this trap of, they're not paying me enough, right? They're not paying me enough. But you shouldn't fall into that trap. I mean, I fell into that trap. I remember driving the bus for like $10 an hour or something. Driving a school bus full of a bunch of kids. I mean, you got the responsibility of all these little lives and a fairly stressful job and trying to keep one eye in the mirror and one eye on the road and all this stuff and getting up early, the crack of dawn and all this stuff for $10 and something an hour. I mean, now they pay about twice that much, but still, that was a pitiful wage. But I shouldn't have complained about it because I agreed to it. And if I agreed to it, well, then I shouldn't have complained about it. If I didn't like it, I could go get another job somewhere else. Obviously, in my situation, that was the best deal because I just needed a little bit of money. I didn't need a ton of money, and I wanted the flexibility to be able to do my real job, my more important job, and that job gave me that flexibility to some extent anyway. Probably also contributed to my declining health, but anyway. Matthew 20, 10 through 15. This is the parable of the laborers in the vineyard. We read most of this parable last Sunday. Matthew 20, 10 through 15. But when the first came, this is the, remember the first people. He went out, he found these people that were standing there idle, and he says, I'll give you a penny a day. Come into my vineyard and work, I'll give you a penny a day. And it was understood they were going to work the whole day. Like a 12-hour day, right, for a penny, a day's wages, in other words, like we talked about last time. And when the first came, so they're expecting that they're going to get paid more, because what happened, you remember, is he continues to hire people as the day goes on. He goes out at lunchtime, and he goes out in the afternoon, and then he goes out in the 11th hour. There's only an hour left. He says, hey, come work in my vineyard. I'll pay you whatever's right. He didn't tell them a penny. He just said, I'll pay you whatever's right. Well, then he starts paying them, beginning with the last and going back to the first. And he pays the first people that worked for an hour, he pays them a penny. So the people that had agreed to work 12 hours for a penny, they're assuming, well, he's paying them a penny for an hour. He must be going to give me 12 pennies, 12 cents, because I worked 12 times as long. But he gets to them and he says, here's your penny. And they're like, whoa, wait a minute. This guy got a penny for an hour. He's like, well, who cares? I promised, you agreed for a penny. I'm giving you what you agreed to. Why are you complaining? Okay, let's read the passage now that I've given you a little bit of background. But when the first came, they supposed that they should have received more. And they likewise received every man a penny. And when they had received it, they murmured, they complained. They murmured against the good men of the house, saying, these last have wrought but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal unto us, which have borne the burden and heat of the day. But he answered unto them and said, friend, I do thee no wrong. Didst not thou agree with me for a penny? Take that thine is and go thy way, and I will give unto this last, even as unto thee. Is it not lawful for me to do what I will with mine own? Is thine eye evil because I am good? So the first shall be last, and the Or so the last shall be first and the first last, for many be called, but few chosen. There's a spiritual lesson in here as well. You know, the person who gets converted, like the thief on the cross, at the end of his life, he goes to the same heaven that the man that served Christ his entire life from his youth does. There might be some rewards there, but he gets the same blessing, in a sense anyway. But yeah, human nature. Well, that's not fair. Even though I agreed to it, that's not fair. It's not just human nature, it's animal nature as well. I saw this experiment. It's really interesting. It was with monkeys. And they, it was monkeys. And they had monkeys in cages side by side, and they couldn't talk to, or they couldn't interact with each other, but they could see each other. And they gave the one monkey some fruit, something like that. And he takes the fruit and ate it, and I think he had to do something to get it, and he did whatever he had to do. He got the fruit, he ate it, and he was liking that. And then they give the other monkey a piece of fruit, and same thing, and they're both happy. And then he goes back to the first monkey, he gives him a piece of fruit, and he does it, and he's all happy. Then he gives the second monkey a piece of candy. And the first monkey's like, what the heck are you doing? And so when he goes back to the first monkey, he's expecting a piece of candy now. And he gives him a piece of fruit. That monkey got mad. He took that fruit, threw it down. Like he was furious. He was happy with it, you know, a minute ago. But boy, that other monkey got a piece of candy. Now he is mad because he's getting what he had agreed to do, right? He had done the trick and he was, you know, it's not just human nature, it's animal nature. It's pretty funny. H. Jackson Brown Jr. in Life's Little Instruction Book, you'll hear me quote this book a lot. It's my favorite, I think, outside of the Bible these days anyway. But he said, never criticize the person who signs your paycheck. If you are unhappy with your job, resign. I think that's good advice. Never criticize the person who signs your paycheck. You don't like it, quit. Now, I'll give you a little side note here. And he does mention this in the book. I think I didn't dig up the quote. He does say the same thing that I'm going to say. Never quit your job until you have another one lined up. Right? That's the dumbest thing in the world you can do. I don't care how mad you are. I don't care how upset you are, how burnt out you are, how sick and tired of your job you are. Never, unless you are a millionaire and you can live for years and years on end with no income and it's not going to hurt you in the slightest bit, never quit your job until you have another job. There's a couple of reasons for this. First, you never know how long it might take you to find another job. You think, oh, I'll quit my job, I'll have another one in a week. You might not have another one for a month or 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year. You have no idea what the future may hold. You don't know what a day may bring forth. Go to you that say, we'll go into this city and that city and continue there a year and buy and sell and get gain. James says, you know not what's on the morrow. You don't know what's going to happen. I know of somebody that he didn't quit, but he got laid off and looked and looked and looked for a job for months and months and months. And because of non-compete agreement that he had signed with his company, because people in professional type careers often do that, sign non-competes, he couldn't get a job with any other company in the area doing the same kind of work because of this non-compete that he signed for, I think it was for a couple of years. So couldn't find a job. Started his own business because he couldn't find a job after looking for a long, long time. So now he didn't quit the job, so I'm not talking about somebody in that situation. He was laid off. But never quit a job until you have another job already lined up, and I mean lined up like contract signed, the whole deal, like it's a sure thing. But secondly, the second reason why you never quit a job until you found another one is that it's much easier to find a job when you have a job. Much easier to find a job when you have a job. Now, of course, you have less time to look for a job when you have a job, but it's way easier to, I'll put it this way, it's a lot easier to get a job when you have a job. Far easier. There's also two reasons for this. First, it looks better to a prospective employer when you have a job. See, if you're unemployed, it could be due to no fault of your own. Could be the case. Or it could be that you were fired for being lazy, incompetent, disagreeable, or dishonest. Your prospective employer does not know. Because in case you haven't learned this about people, if you haven't, you probably will figure it out here in the next decade or so. People can put on a good face and lie. And they can sit there in an interview and say, oh, I was let go because the company was restructuring or whatever, when he got let go because he was, you know, embezzling money out of the corporation. You know, people lie. You probably know that. So in a prospective employer, he doesn't know really the difference, because people are pretty crafty sometimes. So there's always a bit of hesitancy, you know, a bit of the unknown there when you're trying to hire somebody. You never know what you're going to get. It's like a box of chocolates. The other thing is unless the laws have changed, I haven't been in the job market for a long time, but former employers cannot say anything about former employees. So you can put down your former employers on your application as references, and your prospective employer can call your old employers. And you know what they're going to say? Yes, he worked for us from this date until that date. And that's it. That's all they're going to say, if they're smart. They can't say, oh, we let him go because he was a bum, he was lazy, he was dishonest. Or they can't even say, he was a great worker, he did an excellent job, but we just had to let him go because we got to slow down and we just had no choice. They won't say anything. They will say, yes, he worked for us. And the prospective employee or employer, I keep mixing those terms up, the employer, he doesn't know. What's he going to do? The second reason that it's much easier to find a job when you already have a job is because you'll be far more at ease in an interview when you already have a job and you don't need a different one. If you've ever interviewed when you already have a job, it's a totally different thing than when you're unemployed and you need a job. If you've been there, you understand what I'm saying. I used to get calls from headhunters, from recruiters. A lot. I don't get calls anymore because I have like a 16-year-old resume on CareerBuilder from forever ago. Never updated it, never needed to. And CareerBuilder, I don't know, it must be. I don't think too many people use it anymore. I think people use Indeed these days. But anyway, CareerBuilder used to be a big deal. And I still get emails. I just got one yesterday. I still get emails with job offers from a 16-year-old resume on CareerBuilder. It's amazing. But anyway, I used to get calls sometimes, and I remember one time getting a call, and I was not looking for a job, didn't need a job, didn't want another job, but the recruiter called and said, hey, I got this great opportunity, there's this job, you know, are you interested? And the first words out of my mouth are, I don't know, what's it pay? If you've ever been looking for a job before, and you've ever gone to an interview, or you've ever had a headhunter call you when you were unemployed, you would never, ever respond to him like that. You wouldn't say, oh, what's it pay? You'd be like Johnny on the spot, on your tiptoes. You'd be being as professional and as nice as possible. You wouldn't even mention the money. You'd be trying to sell yourself big time, right? But when you don't need a job, I'm just like, I don't know, what's it pay? And guess what? He wasn't turned off by that. He told me what it paid. We had a conversation because I was totally at ease because I didn't want a job. I didn't care about a job. I would ask a question that would be improper in most cases, but I was comfortable. Like I said, it's way easier to get a job if you already have one. Interviewers will pick up on desperation and be turned off by it. They can see a guy sitting there at the interview table, and they can see how nervous he is and how desperate he is for this job, and that's a turnoff. If you've never interviewed somebody before and you don't know about that, imagine if you were when you were dating before you were married. And imagine you're sitting there on your first date and you can sense that the boy or the girl is completely desperate and just like, this is make or break. If I don't get this one, I'm totally screwed. I'm going to be, you know, like, I'm never going to get married or whatever. Would you be like, yep, that one's for me, right? I want that desperate one. Of course not. You wouldn't like that, would you? You want the one that's, I mean, maybe not totally cool and calm and like, oh, I don't care, you know, whatever. If you like me, you do. If you don't, you don't. But you also don't want somebody that's like, you know, on his hands and knees begging and pleading you for a second date or something. On the other hand, an interviewer will also perceive calmness and confidence and be impressed by it. Right? They like that. They don't like arrogance and haughtiness. There's a difference. But they like calmness and confidence. Another thing that I learned from Life's Little Instruction Book, it's not in here, I just thought about it, But he said something like, never turn down a job offer until you've heard the person out first. Even if you don't think you're interested at all. Maybe you got a job, you love your job, you're making good money, you don't want another job at all, and somebody through the course of life meets you and says, hey, why don't you come work for me? Never say no automatically. Never. I don't care what the job is. I don't care what the company is. Never say no automatically. Say, well, what do you got? What are you offering? What's the job? Why do you want me to work for you? And you never know. You never know what might happen. Another one from Life's Little Instruction Book. Listen carefully, because sometimes opportunity knocks softly. Listen carefully. You never know. Sometimes there's opportunities out there if you just pay attention. And that job that that guy's offering you, it may turn out that it would be a great job and you just didn't realize it. So never turn somebody down automatically. All right, now let's get back to this being content with your wages there. So I kind of took a bit of chased a little rabbit trail there about quitting your job if you don't like your job, and then not quitting it until you have another one. But let's get back to this being content with your wages. So complaining about your employer, that's wrong unless he has not fulfilled his end of the contract. Let me give you a couple of examples. I'll give you examples of complaining about your employer that are okay because he didn't fulfill his end of the contract. Let's look at Genesis 29 and verse 25. Genesis 29, 25. This is Jacob. He had legitimate complaints about his employer, so to speak. Genesis 29, 25. And it came to pass that in the morning, this is after he had worked for 7 years for one woman and ended up with a different one the next morning. Behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? You tricked me. You deceived me. He's complaining to his employer about his wages. And he was perfectly within his rights to do so. When you work for a Rachel and you get a Leah, you are within your rights to complain. And then he didn't take him to court over it. He just worked another 7 years to get Rachel. But he was within his rights. He also complained later on that Laban had changed his wages 10 times. Jacob put up with a lot more than a lot of people would. Genesis 31, 7 through 8. Genesis 31, 7 through 8. And your father hath deceived me. He's talking to Rachel? He's talking to Rachel, yeah. That's always a good way to start off your day in marriage, talking about how your wife's father has deceived you. And your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times, but God suffered him not to hurt me. Verse 8, and he said thus, the speckled shall be thy wages. Then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said thus, the ringstraked shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ringstraked. He didn't bother to talk about how he made this happen, you know. But anyway, regardless, the deal was he got all the speckled. The flock started bearing speckled, and Laban says, oh, no, 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 you can't have the speckled because you're going to end up with too much. He says, okay, give me the ringstraked. So then the ringstraked start bearing more, and Laban says, oh, no, you can't have the ringstraked. Right? So Laban was not a man of his word, and Jacob was complaining here, and rightly so. Verse 41. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. Now he's talking to Laban. See, it always starts off complaining to your wife about your employer, and then you go complain to the employer himself eventually. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters and 6 years for thy cattle, and thou hast changed my wages 10 times. So nothing wrong with complaining when you've been screwed over like that. Also, James chapter 5 and verse 4. James 5, 4. I'll give you a New Testament example. James 5, 4. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, crieth. And the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. See, they're complaining that they haven't been paid what they were promised, and it enters into God's ears. He doesn't reject it. He's hearing it. He's listening to it. Right? It's okay. You can go to God and you can complain when you're not being paid what you were agreed to, what you agreed to be paid. Now, here's one thing I want you to think about. The next time you complain about your employer, I want you to think about this. Ask yourself this question. Why would you complain about the one person or the one company in the entire world who actually employs you and pays you when thousands of others offer you no opportunity and pay you nothing? You got thousands of companies out there that pay you zero, and you don't complain about them. But you complain about the one company that pays you anything, that gave you an opportunity to work for them. You complain about the only company that does anything for you, and you don't complain about any of the rest. Think about that. Think about that. All right, now I want to talk a little bit about employers and employees, and just to give you some, this is my perspective anyway, on the situation. I think it can really help in your work life if you have an understanding of the employer-employee relationship. It might help you to have a better relationship with your employer when you can sort of start to see things from his perspective. Being an employer is very difficult. He had to work and underconsume to save money to start a business, if he was smart. If he was dumb, he went into huge debt to start a business, which is a really bad idea. But if he was smart, he had to work as an employee himself for years, underconsume and save to start a business. This is basically, I've read of what Elon Musk did. He would work whatever job would pay the most. It wouldn't matter how horrible a job it was, how terrible the conditions were. Wherever he could make the most money, he would work there and make as much money as he possibly could so that he had money to invest in starting a business. And he's the richest man in the world now. So this is what a lot of people that ended up making it, before they ended up making it, they did stuff like that. Here's another one. I think this was from Life's Little Instruction Book. I've heard it different places, but overnight success usually takes 15 years. Remember that. Overnight success takes 15 years. All right, getting back to the employer, though, how it's very difficult to be him. He had to risk his savings on an endeavor that was likely to fail, because most startup businesses do, like 90% of them. He had to risk his savings to go into this endeavor that would probably fail. And I know what I'm talking about. I started two businesses, online businesses, that completely failed. And I started one that wasn't very successful. So I know all about pouring your heart and soul and money and time and energy into businesses that fail. I know all about it. He had to put in very long hours to start, grow, and sustain his business. You know, this idea that you get a business going and then just kind of step back and let other people run it, and it, you know, you don't have to put many hours into it, in most cases is not true. I was just reading about Getty, Paul Getty. I have a quote from him later. I don't know if I'll get there or not. But Paul Getty, he was an oil tycoon. I wasn't even familiar with him. It's amazing. He was one, I think he was the richest man in America at one point back in the mid-1900s, and you've probably heard of his name, though, if you didn't realize it. Have you ever been on reading a news article, and you see they have a picture in the news article, and you look below the picture, and it says, image by Getty? You ever see that? Oh, pay attention next time. Pay attention next time you're reading on mainstream media news articles, and you see an image, and you'll see Getty, a lot of times Getty below it. He started a huge art institute. He was a huge collector of art, you know, multi-billionaire. But anyway, where was I going with that? Oh, the guy worked, even when he was well established and like hugely wealthy, he worked like 16 to 18 hours a day running and managing his company. Crazy. The guy was something else, extremely frugal. I mean, a miser. he's a billionaire, the equivalent of a billionaire back in those days anyway. And when his shirts would start to fray on the cuffs, he would trim them and re-sew them instead of buying a new shirt. He had this great big mansion where he lived and people worked for him at, I guess. I don't know if this is a place. I think it was his, I don't know if it was where he lived or his place of employment. He installed a payphone there because he was tired of seeing the phone bills so high because employees and people were using his phone. Installed a payphone in there. Got a lot of flack from that. Yeah, he was something else. Extremely frugal. Don't emulate his life. He was married 5 times, divorced 5 times. He was not a good guy. But anyway, back to the employer, how it's difficult. He has to pay his employees whether or not he makes any money. You realize that? It doesn't matter whether you make any money. It doesn't matter if any sales come in this month. It doesn't matter if you have huge expenses. You got to pay your employees, period, whether you make money or not. He has to train his employees and oftentimes make no money from them for a season until they're trained and proficient at their job. He has to worry about whether he can make payroll or not. Employees never even think of such a thing. They just, hey, the paycheck comes every 2 weeks. They don't, you know, my employer's got lots of money. They have no idea sometimes what's going on behind the scenes. They haven't looked at their employer's bank account. He has the stress of knowing that his employees and their families depend on him. You know, because a lot of employers, they love their employees. And they feel a sense of duty to take care of them. And that's a lot of stress. The employer has to pay high taxes. Pays a ton of taxes. A lot more than most people do because he makes more than most people do. He has to comply with onerous regulations. Just tons of regulations that business owners have to comply with that employees wouldn't know a thing about. He has to forecast future revenue and hire and fire people accordingly. So I say honest entrepreneurs and business owners should be respected and admired, not envied and disdained like they are by a lot of people. Here's the Paul Getty quote that I mentioned earlier. He says, I have no complex about wealth. I have worked hard for my money, producing things people need. I believe that the industrial leader who creates wealth and employment is more worthy of historical notice than politicians or soldiers. And I agree with him. I do. I mean, you may disagree with me on that, but I agree with him. This guy, he had a grandson who was apparently an idiot. And his grandson was over in Italy and got kidnapped by, I think it was the Italian mafia, and they wanted to get a ransom out of him, and Getty wouldn't pay it. And they chopped off the kid's ear and mailed it to him. And then he finally agreed to pay. He negotiated the ransom with them and didn't want to and was not happy about it at all. And he was probably not happy that his grandson got in that situation in the first place. But then he also wasn't happy. He's like, if I do this, then the rest of my grandkids are going to get kidnapped too. And so is every other wealthy person's grandkids. And I mean, it would be a horrible position to be in. But anyway, and then that poor kid, I think, ended up committing suicide later on because he was obviously traumatized and terrorized and horrible thing. So it's not always a bed of roses to be rich or to have a rich family, that's for sure. Now, being an employee is very easy compared to being an employer. Now, of course, employees would probably balk at this because they haven't been on both sides of the table. But an employee takes on very little risk when he takes a job. He's guaranteed a paycheck whether or not the company is profitable. If something goes wrong, the employee could lose his job and have to find another one. I mean, if something majorly goes wrong, like the company goes belly up, yeah, the employee's got to go find another job. But the employer's lost all that he worked for years. He's lost everything. The employee has probably a fairly minor inconvenience, depending on the situation. He just has to go find another job. Normally speaking, when the employee goes home, he doesn't have to worry about the business. Now, there are some employees that would. I mean, that they really care about it. But in, you know, most employees, they go home, they don't think about it. They get to go on vacation and relax and not worry about the company. Company owner doesn't get to go on vacation and relax and not worry about the company. He gets to go on vacation and think about the company the whole time he's on vacation. And half the time have to be working when he's on vacation because, you know, people need things. The employee gets paid while he's in training, when he's not making the company anything or very little. If he isn't happy with his job, he can find another one doing the same thing or something else. If the employer is not happy with his company, it's not like, oh, well, I'll just close this one down and start another one. Yeah, it's kind of a different story. The employee's taxes are extremely simple. You get a W-2, probably have maybe a 1099 INT if you have any money in the bank, and that's about it. Maybe you got your mortgage and mortgage interest or something if you paid that, if you itemized. But, I mean, it's simple as cake. I mean, there's nothing to it, right? Try being self-employed sometime. And the bigger your business is, the more complex it gets. But, you know, you got expenses and deductions and all kinds of stuff to deal with. And you got to keep receipts and keep records and very complicated, very time and labor intensive. The employee has no or very limited regulations to comply with. And furthermore, if he screws up and doesn't comply with a regulation, worst case scenario is getting fired. That's it. The employer could get sued big time and be out of business or be in jail or something. Employee, as far as I know, employees pretty much can't get in trouble for anything. I mean, if they can screw all kinds of stuff up, and all the worst that can happen is they get fired. Totally different deal when you're the employer. And most people are not cut out to be self-employed business owners. And this is why most people are employees and very few are employers. But I say thank God for that small percentage of the population that has what it takes to be employers and employ other people and start businesses and all that, because then the rest of us have jobs to go to. So thank the Lord that there are a few out there that can do that kind of thing. Now, I want to talk about one other thing. This will probably be the last thing that I have to talk about. Let me see here. Yeah, I think so. I have several pages left in the outline again, but there's always next Sunday. So, some people think that it's not right that employers make money off their employees. That's just not right. They shouldn't be able to make extra money. Basically, the employer should make about what the employees do because, you know, he's working 8 hours a day like they are, right? So he shouldn't make extra money off the backs of his employees. That's just not right. Right? That's not right. He's exploiting them. Those poor people could be working for themselves and making all that extra money for themselves, but he's taking all that extra money that they're making and he's taking it, right? He's exploiting them. You know, there's a reason they're working for him and not working for themselves. Because if they were working for themselves, they'd be begging bread, more than likely, because they'd be like the other 90% of business owners that go out of business. It's really hard, right? There's a reason for that. But I want you to think about this. Now, I don't think any of you are socialists, so hopefully you haven't had these sentiments. But there are a lot of people out there that have these sentiments. An employer assumes a lot of risk when starting a business and hiring employees. There's a lot of risk there. And these days, it's a risky thing to hire employees because there's all these lawsuits. You hire an employee and maybe you don't call the employee by the right pronoun, or you don't give whatever. I mean, any number of things, right? Maybe you hire an African American and fire him because he's a lazy bum. Lawsuit. It doesn't matter if he's a lazy bum, right? Or if you hire a woman and fire her, lawsuit. Doesn't matter if she was a terrible employee, right? You are up for a lawsuit. The only person you can fire and not worry about a lawsuit is a white man. You fire a white man all day long. You don't got to worry about that. You fire anybody else, lawsuit, potential anyway. So he has a lot of risk when he starts a business and hires people. In most cases, the employer must pay his employees for their labor before he receives the revenue that they generate. You know, they do work, and their work will generate him income. Maybe they're working in building widgets or something, right? Well, he eventually will be able to sell these widgets and make the money back on their labor, but right now he's paying them today for their labor, and he might not get paid for months down the road, right? So he's got this upfront cost, and he may never actually get the money that these employees are hoping to bring him. The employee gets paid for his labor immediately or within a very short period of time, and he assumes very little risk. I mean, basically, his maximum risk is the length of his paycheck, right? I mean, he's got 2 weeks of labor risk. I guess he could not get paid and then be like, well, time to get another job, right? Not that much risk, but the employer, he's got a lot of risk. The employer risks paying the employee but never getting compensated. Like I said, you know, maybe the widgets never sell. Maybe the market changes and nobody wants the widgets that he paid his employees all this money to produce. And now what? He's just lost all the pay that he gave them. The employer provides the employee with equipment, tools, and machines that make him far more productive than he otherwise would be. You know, imagine if you tried to produce the widgets with your own two bare hands, or with your hammer and your file and your pliers or whatever, instead of the big machines that the employer paid millions of dollars for that he gives you, and you just have to, you know, turn a couple of knobs and manage a couple of things. You can produce thousands and thousands and thousands of widgets every day, whereas if you were trying to produce them with your own two bare hands, you probably couldn't even produce one. Right? So the employee is getting a great benefit from the capital that the employer has that he had to work hard for and save money to buy and to build. The employee would never be able to produce enough output with his own two hands to earn the kind of a wage that his employer pays him. Right? So he's actually making way more from the employer. Even though the employer is making money off of him, the employee is making way more money than he would have normally if he didn't have all the equipment that the employer is providing him with. Austin, how many tons of concrete do you think that you could haul from the job site if you put it in your backpack and started walking back and forth? How much would JP be paying you to do that? Not very much. That dump truck can haul a lot more concrete than you can, right? A man would be crazy. An employer would be crazy to start a company, employ others, and take on huge risk to only be paid the same hourly wage that he could make working for somebody else. Who would do that? Who in the world would do that? If I as an employee could go out and make $20 an hour, $30 an hour, or whatever, working for a company doing whatever thing I'm skilled at, why in the world would I put up thousands and thousands of dollars, all this money, all this effort, all this capital, all this risk? Why would I do that to make $20 or $30 an hour? Who in their right mind would do that? You'd be crazy. Just go work for somebody else. It's so much easier. The only reason he's going to do that is because there's a potentially big payoff. He can make a lot of profit if he does it right, but there's a big risk there. He might not make anything. He may go out of business, as many do. See, profit is the reward that the employer receives for the risk that he took. And this is why, really, the only people in the world that are ever going to make a lot of money, and when I say a lot of money, I mean like millions of dollars per year or something, the only people in the world that are ever going to do that, with very few exceptions, and the only exceptions I can think of are like professional sports players or CEOs of multinational corporations or something. Nobody else is going to make that kind of money, you know, millions a year. The only people that are going to do that are business owners. But most of them don't make that kind of money. You know, most of them, they get by at best, and some of them don't even hardly do that. Highly skilled people can work for others, or who work for others, can make a good living. But they're never going to make the huge sums of money like, you know, a business owner would, because they can only trade their hours for a limited amount of money. If you're trading your hours for money, there's only so much you can make. You know, if you're very skilled, you can make in the six figures. If you're highly skilled, like a heart surgeon, you can make in the multiple six figures. But you're never going to make in the millions, you know, like some of these very successful business owners. You're never going to make that kind of money with, you know, trading hours for dollars. Your hours just aren't worth that much. Trading time for money will never make one super wealthy. Only those who learn how to make money while they are not working will generate large amounts of wealth. And that's essentially what business owners do. They make money when they're not, maybe they're working, but they're not doing all the work, right? And in some cases, right, they can eventually pay other people to manage their company for them if they get big enough. And then they can invest their money, and their money will make money for them. Those are the people that end up with some real wealth. Warren Buffett said, if you don't find a way to make money while you sleep, you will work until you die. But there's hope for the rest of us, because although most people will never make huge sums of money from their labor, nearly anyone who has a decent income and is frugal and saves and invests money wisely, like Jesus taught us in the parable of the talents in Matthew 25, anybody that does that can accumulate a lot of money over time. Let's just look at that one verse and then we'll be done for the day. Matthew 25, 16 through 17. So, yes, the employer will make money off of his employees. He will make profit off of their labor. And if he does it well and he's successful, he could make a lot of money. And most of us will never be there. Most of us are never going to be company owners like that, because that takes a special breed. But the rest of us can still end up pretty well off. If we labor, if we're frugal, if we save and invest money wisely. Matthew 25, verses 16 and 17. And I'll have a lot more to say about this later on in the study. Then he that had received five talents went and traded with the same and made them other five talents. And likewise, he that had received two, he also gained other two. All right, so these men took and traded and invested, and they took the relatively meager little income that they had, and they made it multiply. And any one of us can do that if we're wise with our money. And that's, I want to talk about that, like I said, later on in this study. But next time we'll pick it up where I left off and see if we can't get through the rest of what I wanted to today. So I thank you for your kind and patient attention again this morning.